From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of March, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In Washington, D.C. today, representatives of farm groups testified before a subcommittee on agriculture for the House. Ron Moore, president of the American Soybean Association, an Illinois farmer, will join us from the airport as he gets ready to fly back home. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. Don Deo tells us that he expects more rainfall across the Midwest, the whole of the United States, in fact, as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's see. We've got just a couple of days, actually Wednesday, Thursday, and then part of Friday before we get to the USDA reports. Both the grain stocks and the acreage numbers are due out. The trade's been fairly quiet. At least today it was an uptrend quiet as opposed to a downtrend quiet, I guess. Anything else we ought to know about the marketplace?
Well, you know, it was Tuesday. We've been down pretty hard all of last week and along the way. So we thought we were going to get a little better turnaround. We did. It did stay in the green, but barely on this corn and beans that way. You know, the South American crop just continues to grow or is holding its own. We do have a little hope of maybe some, you know, problems with a little excess rain in Argentina maybe over the next couple weeks. But all in all, that's a big crop that's doing well. And boy, we've been getting some rains across the dry southeast where the drought conditions did exist. And, you know, with a little more and one more batch across there, why, they're going to be getting raced.
Yeah, so spring has sprung, and that generally changes things. Has the mood of farmers changed with the rainfall?
They know that they aren't going to get in the field quite as soon as we look at the weather forecast. Like you're talking, probably won't be next week either as far as getting much field work done as that goes. You know, we were talking to some farmers here this morning, and they're getting early chemicals and seed in now. And some of the guys delivering it were saying that they thought there'd be a lot more bean acres because they'd really been delivering a lot of bean chemicals and bean seed rather than as much corn and corn chemicals as last year. So we did get an indication that there might be the fulfillment of the extra bean acres on at least from a couple farmers today.
And the thought, I suppose, with those acres would be coming from across the whole of the Midwest, not in certain areas. Does that surprise you or not?
It somewhat does. I didn't see a real big switch here in Indiana or any of those that I talked to in Illinois much, but that was central Indiana where those two guys were talking about, that their delivery people were talking about the increased bean acres.
And what are your expectations once we, if the trade comes out, USDA that is, on Friday at 11 o'clock central with numbers that are somewhere in the range of what the trade is thinking, so up 4 or 5 million for soybeans, so we're in that 88 to 89 range, and around 90-91, I suppose, for corn. What happens?
Well, I think then we settle down and look and see what the weather is going to be, because those are the numbers we've been playing here. Our average guesses, you know, are 90.7 or so is the average guess on corn. 88.2 is the average guess on beans. That's what Reuters put out yesterday. So, I mean, basically, if we don't vary much from those numbers, that's the numbers we've been trading. And then I think we're going to look and just see what the weather is looking like and what's going on in the world. You know, we did see the crude oil today inching back up. That's a little help. We did see the dollar inching back up after its sort of depression after the way that the Congress acted on Friday. The sort of the non-confidence vote was taking some out of the dollar. I think the dollar going back up was a little bit weighed on the bean market. You know, all in all, this time of year, we start looking at the weather, and we generally have a little bit of an uptrend until we see that stuff gets in the ground.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk with you again next Tuesday after reports have been released, and we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the Trump administration has made a list of $18 billion with a B in cuts it wants to see Congress make this fiscal year, a move that puts foreign food aid, rural business loans, and FDA funds on the chopping block. In an extensive document shared with House and Senate Appropriations Committees Friday of last week, the Trump administration offered its most detailed recommendations to date on how Congress should shape the trillion-dollar spending legislation lawmakers must enact by the 28th of April to prevent a government shutdown. Now, the cuts President Trump wants made are aimed at the last 5 months of the current fiscal year and would compound the 21% proposed reduction for USDA the administration included in its 2018 slim budget outline released earlier this month. The proposal calls for about $1 billion in cuts to the Department of Agriculture's 2017 spending. Here's a quick look at the spending cuts. These come courtesy of Politico. A $40 million cut to the FDA, a reduction the administration says could be absorbed in part by slower than anticipated hiring. $363 million from Food for Peace, a 60-year-old program housed at USAID that has helped feed billions in developing countries. A $136 million cut to essentially eliminate funding for the McGovern-Dole International Food Program. It's a bipartisan initiative that feeds millions of vulnerable school children throughout the world. $40 million cut to rural business and cooperative grant programs. Despite decades of funding, RBS programs have failed to move the dial in rural areas, according to the document. And the department's IG found two of the agency's largest loan and grant programs to be improperly managed. One of the president's proposed cuts, by the way, to the 2017 funding does not have timing on its side. A call for Congress to eliminate funds USDA has left over from its last major fight against avian flu. The possibility of the money being needed was reinforced by news earlier this week that Georgia has detected probable presence of a low pathogenic strain of H7 in a commercial flock in one of its counties. The latest in a handful of cases this year, mostly in the South. While Georgia and federal officials have not yet gathered the full genetic makeup of the virus, all of the farm's 18,000 birds have been culled. USDA had $80 million to $90 million remaining from the $1 billion Congress gave it to fight avian flu in 2015. On that note, U.S. trading partners didn't wait long to respond. Georgia's addition to the list of states with confirmed avian influenza cases, Wisconsin is in that group too, brought a new wave of trade restrictions. This, according to a USDA listing, 7 countries, including Japan, now impose restrictions on poultry from Chattooga County in Georgia. That group could grow as Hong Kong Center for Food Safety announced a ban on Monday. The good news is that so far only Tennessee has confirmed the presence of HPAI H7N9, the more severe strain of the virus, and that most trading partners have limited their bans to the county level and not the state level. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where representatives of the corn, wheat, barley, sorghum, and soybean lobbies have been defending the Farm Bill's Agriculture Risk Program and Price Loss Coverage Programs, those are the ARC and PLC programs, when they've been testifying before the House Agriculture Subcommittee. The programs, which were established in the 2014 law, Farm Bill that is, respectively make payments to farmers when county revenue drops below certain guaranteed levels based on historic averages or crop prices fall under the set of target prices in the Farm Bill. Together, they cost about $7.8 billion for the 2015 crop year, a cushion the organizations argue is needed given the sharp drop in commodity prices and therefore net farm income since 2013. However, growers who signed up for ARC, mainly corn and soybean farmers in the Midwest, are concerned about large discrepancies in subsidies from county to county due to the data USDA is using to calculate the payments. When enough producers in a county respond to yield surveys by the department's National Agricultural Statistics Service, or USDA NAS, that data is used. Otherwise, information from the RMA is used. Groups are hoping this issue can be resolved in the next Farm Bill to create some consistency. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Glisson. As you heard in our news segment, agricultural industry folks were in Washington, D.C. today, and farmers representing their particular organizations. Ron Moore is the president of the American Soybean Association and a farmer from Illinois. He's from Roseville and now joins us. I think you're in the airport, maybe, Ron, today, getting ready to fly back home. Is that right?
That's correct. Correct, Todd. Yeah, just got to the airport, and, you know, it's a great opportunity to spend time in Washington, D.C. with the people who legislate and are going to be writing the next farm bill. So we had the opportunity to visit with them today.
So the Trump administration has told Washington, D.C. in its budget it would like USDA to take a 21% cut. However, that's from the discretionary spending, and you were there today, I think, talking more about Title I spending and the ARC and PLC programs, maybe a little bit about crop insurance programs. What is it that you're concerned about and that you're hopeful about for the Farm Bill debate that's coming up this spring?
Yeah, first of all, we want to make sure that crop insurance still stays viable and it's a robust crop insurance program that provides safety net for farmers across the country that raise commodity crops. Second, we want to make sure that the ARC program and the PLC program stays as a choice that farmers have as they decide whether to protect their revenue or protect the price, depending on their particular situation and crop prospects.
And did you speak to a relatively friendly crowd today? I assume it was the Ag Subcommittee, so I'm thinking
yes,
there.
Yes, yep. It was the Ag Subcommittee that talks about farm bills, and yeah, it was a friendly crowd. They're all well versed on the issues. They understand that we have a different economic scenario now than when the last farm bill was passed in 2014, and that there are stressors out there in the ag economy that need to be addressed to make sure that we understand that they understand that prices are considerably lower and that we still need the risk management safety net tools that we currently have in the farm bill that we need to make sure that they still stay there.
Clearly in this past crop year, very good yields coupled with the ARC payment managed to get many farmers through. That'll change substantially even if we were to raise a good crop in the current crop year, or the 2017, the one that's about to come in to play. Do they understand the difference in those two crop years and how ARC might make a difference for producers of corn and soybeans across the Midwest?
Yes. Well, ARC is, when you calculate the average, they use an Olympic average to calculate the prices. And so you're dropping a high and dropping a low and averaging the other three. So what has happened as we have lowered our prices that we receive for corn and soybeans, those reference prices are lower, and so you're dropping off a lower high than we've had in the past year. So one of the suggestions we had was to just drop the Olympic average part of the formula and average all five of those previous crop years in. That raises the reference price. One of the other things we talked about is, you know, the payment that we received this past fall was for the 2015 crop year. And so anything we do in the 16 crop year is going to be calculated and paid in October of 17, and the 17 crop year is going to be in 18. So we talked about how more difficult it is for farmers to get their operating lines of credit, and especially when there's the calculations take 6 months from now before you finally get a calculation. So bankers are not factoring in anything for that potential payment. And so this makes it extremely difficult for farmers to get the operating credit they need to continue to produce a crop for this 17 crop year.
Was there any thought in the conversations you had, whether they happened to take place during the testimony or other places, about potential cuts to the safety net programs? The discretionary spending, clearly the Trump administration has already targeted but these other spending programs for ARC PLC crop insurance are not among those. They're not discretionary spending. Will they be targeted as well, do you suppose?
It depends on how the Congressional Budget Office scores the baseline, and it's difficult to make that prediction, but what we do know is that it's going to be difficult to add any more dollars from outside the baseline. That there doesn't seem to be any sentiment in Congress, on in the Senate or the House, to add more money to this. The flexibility that Chairman Conaway from the House Ag Committee has asked for is to be able to move money within the Farm Bill, within the title program, to put more funds where they're needed most. But we've asked for more funds. You know, our position at ASA is let's fund the programs where they need to be funded, to the level they need to be funded, to give some certainty and make sure we have a robust safety net. Now, that's our ask, and we understand that it's going to be a challenge. But if we don't continue to ask for the things that agriculture needs in the Farm Bill, we know for sure we're not going to get them. So we're trying to make sure that all the principals that are going to be writing the Farm Bill know how important it is that we put out a safety net systems and Title I, ARC County, and the PLC programs, that they have enough funding to satisfy the needs out in agriculture and out in the countryside this year.
Hey, Ron, thanks so much. Have a safe flight back to Illinois.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Happy to talk to you anytime.
All right. Ron Moore, of course, is the president of the American Soybean Association, talking to us from Washington, D.C. This is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. I'm Yovai Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by Don DeHeese, Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, we've been wanting a little bit of rainfall, and it looks like that's going to come not only for our part of the world here in the Midwest, but for some of the areas out west that have been pretty dry. Can you tell me what's happening?
Yeah, I think we've got a pattern that we were all hoping for, and we're getting it, and things are lining up to bring rain to a lot of the areas that needed it the most. And we certainly saw that late last week with a very wet spring storm over some very dry areas of eastern Colorado, southwest Nebraska, and Kansas. And then that moved into the dry areas of Missouri and portions of Iowa and portions of the Corn Belt. And lo and behold, that's what's unfolding for this week and in the next week. Not one, not two, but three systems will go from the Pacific Northwest through the desert southwest, through the high plains and Rockies, and then in the Corn Belt. So precipitation prospects look very good for the Corn Belt and the wheat areas of the west, central, and southwest.
In your opinion, is this the beginning of a persistent type of system which will come through each and every week of the early spring?
Well, I certainly see that. All indications suggest that the spring season is unfolding about as it should. And what's encouraging, at least for the areas that are dry right now, that as we look ahead into the first couple of weeks of April, while there'll be gaps between the storms that could be as long as 3 days, 4 days, there are storms in the pipeline that will take us into April. So here at the end of March and into early April, I think that many areas of the Corn Belt, the western wheat areas, are going to see more.
I'd rather have a warm, wet spring than a cold, wet spring. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think you may get that. We don't have a lot of available cold air to come in. In fact, we have seen some areas of the western states see more rain than snow here recently with some of these systems, which is not terribly typical for March, and part of that's due to the fact that we got a lot of mild Pacific air getting pushed into the nation. So there's nothing real cold, at least for the next week or 10 days, coming our way.
Oftentimes, if we don't have cold air here, it means it's bottled up somewhere on the other side of the planet. Is that the case at this point? And I'm thinking that I saw a temperature today, both from Kiev, which was pretty cool, and then in the northeastern part of China, where they grow corn and soybeans, part of their growing regions, that was really pretty darn low. I think maybe 1 degree Fahrenheit for their high.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. That's one thing to always remember about the weather. We have one extreme, you have the opposite that's going to be happening somewhere, and that is in Russia. And in far eastern Europe, those areas, as well as portions of Asia and those areas you just mentioned, they are seeing below normal temperatures so far this spring, and that's going to continue. Now, you get into Western and Central Europe, those growing areas more west are warmer and more spring-like, but certainly we'll need to watch those areas in Russia and surrounding countries for continued cold.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.